Purushottam 2010, verse number 2 from Brahma Stuti. Continuing to glorify Krishna's Purushottam. Verse 1, he describes his beauty. And in our list of 18 points, the first one was, of course, the beauty. Then this particular verse is describing how the sweetness of Purushottam Sri Krishna's Madhurya is much more difficult to understand than his Aishwarya aspect. His Aishwarya Rupam of Vishnu is easier to understand. God is powerful, God is mighty and wealthy, opulent. But God is just a human child. Asyapi deva vapusho marunu grahasya swecha mayasya natubhuta mayasya kopi neshe mahi vasitun tum manasantarena sakshattaveva kimutatma sukhanubhute. My dear Lord Krishna, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours, Devavapu, which has shown such mercy to me, Anugraha, and which appears just to fulfill the desires of your pure devotees, Swecha, Swecha Maya. Although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, I cannot understand your personal form. How then could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? So he's saying that I don't understand the cover or the book. We say we can't judge a book by its cover. But sometimes we can have some idea about the book by looking at the cover. That this is a book about mountains, and there's a mountain on the cover. But seeing the cover of Krishna, his form, still Brahma sees his form, his Devavapu, childlike, innocent, but yet so powerful, more powerful than a million Vishnus all in one place. He says, I can't understand externally how you're appearing, what to speak of, what you're feeling, or what you're thinking. What do you feel like being God and playing like a little kid? What does it feel like to be the Ishvara Paramakrishna, but then run around with some boys and wrestle and eat food from each other's mouth and play leapfrog and make faces at the monkeys and pull their tails and shout dirty slogans inside of abandoned water wells and curse the echo? And when you yell in a cave and the echo, your own echo comes back, then you curse, oh, you dirty old man, dirty old man, dirty old man. What are you doing in there? What are you doing in there? What are you doing in there? So they have these funny games they play. I'm very smart, and I'm actually free from this bhutamaya. I have no interest in this external energy. But I really don't understand you. In other words, in this verse, Brahma is setting up the situation for all of us. How can we expect, with our one head and our puny brain, to understand the Nam Rup Gun and Leela of Krishna? The Nam, the holy name of Krishna, his form, transcendental form, his transcendental qualities and his pastimes, which is most difficult to understand. Brahma is saying, forget it, don't even try. He said, because I can't estimate the potency. He's saying neither I nor anyone else, and he's a good authority to speak on behalf of others. I may say subjectively, I see some event, and I may turn to my friends and say, I don't understand what's happening. Maybe you do. And one of our friends says, I understand, it's like this. Because we have a subjective viewpoint. We can have our mind, our observation, and some assessment and discrimination, give our viewpoint, give our opinion. Well, what do you think? Well, I think like this. Well, what do you think? So Brahma is a good spokesman. He's the only one who can speak on behalf of others, because he's the cause of others. He's the original living entity, and he's created all the other bodies of the living entities. empowered by the Lord. He's a Srishtikarta, and he's a progenitor. So he's saying, I can't understand, and who else can understand? I mean, how many other living entities are there in this universe that have four heads? Think about it. Occasionally, we hear about Ravana, and Treta Yuga would have 10 heads when he was fighting. But that was just a mystic illusion. Sometimes he could disappear when he was fighting. He was a Rakshas. He's actually a Brahmin, but he developed these powers and qualities of a Rakshas. But he could disappear, he could change his form at will. So these 10 heads were like, they were simply like puppet heads. They weren't anything particular. They're airheads. They were all 9 airheads. 9 airheads and one that worked. And they were just something to scare everybody. And when he was with his queens or concubines, he only had 1 head. A very handsome figure. His 10 heads are a little hard to deal with. If your queen has 1 pair of lips, it won't go around very far. If the husband has 10 lips and 10 heads. So it's an illusion. It's a mystic illusion. If you're fighting with someone, all of a sudden they manifest 10 heads, and you say, "Whoa, wait a minute, what's going on here?" And they're all so. It's Brahma has 4 functional heads. He's the only one anywhere in Shastra that's glorified and described as Chaturmukh Brahma. He has 4 heads, and he speaks from the 4 mouths, the 4 Vedas, and he has 4 brains, and they're all independently functioning and assessing and understanding things. We don't hear such a description of Ravana. We just hear about Dussehra. There's a festival called Dussehra when, I believe it's the day that Ramachandra killed Ravana during the battle in Sri Lanka to rescue Sita. Dussehra is a big Indian holiday. Maybe it's in Kartik, is it right? In Kartik. Dussehra. So that actually means Das Hara. Hara means to take away, and Das means 10. So Dussehra became Das Hara, became Dussehra, which means the day that Ravana lost his head and all his heads. And we have an expression in English, fly off at the handle. Sometimes our wife flies off at the handle and gets angry and berates the husband bitterly. You stupid this, that. Flies off at the handle. So with the arrows of Ram, then Ravana, he flew off at the handle. He lost all 10 of his heads and died. So Brahma is saying, I'm speaking here in this verse, I can't understand or estimate. I can't even, what to speak of understand, I can't even estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours, the Bhuta Maya. What is this potency that you have? And this form, he says that this form appears Swecha Maya, that you manifest this form to because of the desires of the devotees. They want to see you in a childlike way, in a sweet and innocent and beautiful, charming, approachable way. They want to see you in this Naralila. Oh God, please walk amongst us. Be one of us. Play with us. Come to earth. Have your Bhoma Vrindavan pastimes. So the Lord has that feature. He has an Aishwarya feature, a God feature. He's always godly and transcendental. That's why he says Deva Vapu. His body is transcendental, such as Ananda Vigra, but it acts, and he's appearing for the most part in Vrindavan and also in Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world. And he's acting just like an ordinary, so-called ordinary human being. He's playing, he's crying, he's afraid of the lightning, he gets hungry, he pees on the floor, he makes mischief, he gets in fights with his older brother, and he lies, and all the things that human beings do. He has girlfriends, and it's quite easy to understand, and also most confusing and difficult to comprehend. Somehow I can estimate with my four heads, no one else can, but your devotees, they have a special privy. They can have special access to you. In fact, you manifest your form because of your devotees. You come to this world to please your devotees by entertaining them with your leelas, with your dramas and pastimes. Parichanaya sadhanam vinashaya shudhiskritam. It actually says that killing demons and establishing dharma are secondary purposes of the Lord's advent. He comes primarily to exchange love with his devotees. Love is a much more powerful force than duty. The duty of Krishna or the duty of Bhagavan to establish law and order or to kill demons who are upsetting the dharmic flow of the universe, that can be done by any amsha or expansion of Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. But when he personally comes, is to relieve his devotees of distress and to exchange in lila with them and attract those aspiring sadhakas to his sweet pastimes. Give them something to think about. Give them something to participate in and aspire for. If Krishna's lilas are all going on in the spiritual world in a very confidential region of Goloka, and never written about, because who can see there? Only very special souls. And maybe they would remain confidential. But Krishna came to this planet and made his lilas freely available. Everybody could see them and write about them. And the devotees could experience them. And then they were recorded. And then that's prakat lila. Then in aprakat lila, the sadhakas could read all those renditions and descriptions of Krishna's lilas from previous kalpas and days of Brahma when he came to this planet and relish. Krishna was only here 5,000 years ago. It's unbelievable. Because 5,000 years compared to a day of Brahma is nothing. A day of Brahma is 300 billion years or something like that, some long period of time. And Krishna only comes once to the Earth's planet. So if we want to stay here and keep taking births, I have to wait a few years to see Krishna again. And what will be left of Vrindavan after 300 billion years or whatever the next day of Brahma is? It doesn't seem like much will be left. So therefore Krishna says, if you understand, janma karma cha me divyam evam yo viti tatvata tyaktva deham punarjanma nayati mamati sorjana. If you simply understand my janam utsav, my birth, my lilas here in this poem of Vrindavan, then you'll come to me. Live eternally. There's a purport here. Prabhupada, he gives his purport in the Krishna book. He says that, Prabhupada paraphrases it. He says, your appearance as a coward boy, Lord Krishna, this is the prayerful sentiment of Brahma. O Gopal, your appearance as a coward child is for the benefit of the devotees. And although I have committed offenses at your lotus feet by stealing away your boys and cows, calves, I can understand that you are now showing me your mercy. That is your transcendental quality, anugraha. You are very affectionate toward your devotees. Yet in spite of your affection for me, I cannot estimate the potency of your bodily activities. It is to be understood that when I, the Supreme Personality of this universe, I, Lord Brahma, if I can't estimate the spiritual potency of your childlike body, then what can I understand about your transcendental pastimes? So he doesn't, because the pastimes are the most difficult to understand. That's why there's a sequence. Nam, Rup, Guna, and Leela. Guna means the characteristics or qualities. And Brahma is having some idea about that, about his potencies. The potencies are part of his guna, his qualities, characteristics, attributes, potencies. By your mercy, I have some idea about your potency. I've seen your potencies. I've seen your Vishnumaya right before my eyes. Vimohan, your bewildering potency. You bewildered me absolutely, utterly, completely. You appear in 1 minute as a little boy, next minute you expand into thousands and thousands of calves, lakhs and lakhs of calves and boys. And from each one of your cow, from your one body as a coward boy, there's millions of Vishnu forms expanding. So I'm bewildered you with your Vishnu Maya, your potency. And so somehow I've seen that and have some vague understanding of that it's coming from you, and this is but a spark of your splendor. But your pastimes with yogurt rice in your left hand and eating from your left hand, still like, you haven't given me enough mercy to understand this, because this is the final understanding. Janma karma chame devyam evam yovati tatvana. To understand my birth and activities, which means Krishna's Leela, is not so easy. If one understands Krishna's Leela, then he doesn't take another birth. So Brahma's admitting, I know something by your mercy, anugraha, mad anugrahasya, I know something of your potency, of your Deva Vapu. But the Leelas of your Deva Vapu, your Divya Leela, that escapes me, it's beyond me. Therefore, Prabhupada goes on, as it is said in Gita, anyone who can understand a little of the transcendental pastimes, appearance and disappearance of the Lord, immediately becomes eligible to enter the kingdom of God after quitting the material body. This statement is confirmed in the Vedas, and it is stated simply, by understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can overcome the chain of repeated birth and death. I therefore recommend that people should not try to understand you by their speculative knowledge. Okay. That's an entry from Prabhupada's Krishna book, now the PBT purport. When Brahma disrespected the supreme status of the personality of Godhead Krishna, Lord Krishna first bewildered him by exhibiting the Lord's own transcendental power. After humbling his devotee Brahma, Krishna gave him his personal audience. So there were some cows were wandering away, and then Krishna didn't to serve his devotees, his coward boys. Krishna said, "You all stay here and eat. Eat your lunch. Don't stop eating your lunch. I'll just run real fast and call all the cows to my flute." Now most of all the calves were there, or at least wherever they were, all the boys were there in the banks of the Yamuna. And Brahma said, "Oh, Krishna's not here." So then Krishna was out collecting the calves, so Brahma kidnapped all the boys who were eating with Krishna while he was away. And then he took all the calves he could find here and there. Then Krishna came back and said, "Oh," he appeared to be a little bewildered, "Oh, what happened to my boys?" And then he said, "Oh, I understand." So Brahma actually didn't see him, and when he went to his cave, he put all his boys, and he said, let me go back. It was all within a moment's time of Brahma, but 1 year of Krishna. Let me go back and see if the Lord came back from searching for the calves and what he found, and how bewildered. He must look very bewildered. I mean, if you lose something, you're looking around, "Where is it? Where is it? I was just here. Oh, Subal, Stoga Krishna, Gobata, Kinkini, Vidanta, where are you? Kahan, Kahan." And Krishna's searching and looking. He was just sitting there eating with all the boys. And all the calves were still wandering around. And Brahma came back and then he had his dart. He saw Krishna. He said, "What? He's there with all the boys. I didn't see him before. He's there." And then he went back really fast. "No, but they're all in the cave. All the boys are in the cave with the calves." And he came back. And then Krishna showed all these millions of Vishnu forms. And he said, "Oh, wow. Something's funny here. Something's not right." So he got bewildered. Instead of bewildering Krishna, he wanted to bewilder Krishna and play a little trick on Krishna. Like Krishna, in turn, completely bewildered him beyond his four little brains could accommodate. His brains broke down. Vishnu says that the transcendental body, Krishna's transcendental body, can function through the agency of his plenary expansions called Vishnu Tattva. Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti. Krishna can perform any bodily function with any of his limbs. But, that's somehow Krishna, angani yasya sakalen indriya vritti manti. Vishnu says that Krishna can see through the eyes of Vishnu's his Vishnu expansions, or Krishna can see through the eyes of any living entity. Similarly, he can hear, Krishna can hear through the ears of any Vishnu or Jiva expansion. An interesting point. Prabhupada, once a newspaper reporter interviewed him, and there were some disciples with him in Los Angeles. He said, Swamiji, how do you know what your disciples are doing? What they're doing, whether they're following you or misbehaving, because you have disciples all over the world, how do you keep track of them? He said, Krishna tells me. And then Rameshwar Prabhu was there, and then the newspaper reporter said, Krishna tells you. I mean, like, are you some sentimental Christian who says, I'm talking to God? And Prabhupada was quiet. Then Rameshwar saw that there was some bewilderment on the face of the reporter. So he tried to explain. He said, actually, it's through his intelligence, through Prabhupada's intelligence, he tries to understand. And in this way, Krishna helps him through intelligence. Krishna gives Prabhupada intelligence to understand. Prabhupada said, no, it's not like that. Prabhupada interrupted him and said, it's not like that. Krishna directly tells me from within the heart. So then the guy was still quite awed, and he said, that's one way I know about my disciples. And the other way is that they write me letters. They send me letters and say, Prabhupada, I haven't told anybody about this in the temple, but I'm like this and like that. I want to reveal my mind confidentially. Guyam Prichati in the Nectar Instruction says one should reveal the Guyam, the secrets, to his guru or trusted like-minded God-brothers and inquire from them confidentially or inquire for their help or ask for their help or guidance from like-minded loving God-brothers and sisters or the guru directly himself. And Prabhupada says, sometimes my disciples write me letters telling me about their situation. Or Krishna tells me directly, or someone else tells me. I have my temple presidents around the world, and they write me letters or call me and say, so-and-so Das, your disciple is doing like this or that. And this way, these three different ways. The newspaper reporter was happy with that, or accepted that. So this is what Vishnu is saying in his purport, that Krishna can see through the eyes of any of his Vishnu expansions or any jiva. How is that? Because all the senses of the jivas belong to Krishna, Rishikesh. He's a master of all the senses, and he's sitting in the body of everyone as Paramatma. So Krishna is sitting there, and we're seeing and he's seeing, using our eyes to see what we're doing. So he may see us doing something funny, and then because he's in our heart, and he's also in the heart of the guru, then he speaks in the heart of the guru, oh, your disciple is doing like this. Because he's seeing. That's what it's saying. Krishna can hear through the ears of any Vishnu or Jiva expansion. So Krishna is seeing and he's hearing. Then he whispers in the guru's heart, oh, your disciple's in Maya, doing like this or that. And then all of a sudden, this guru calls the disciple out of the blue, hello, you're doing this? Uh-oh, how did you know? You're in India and I'm in Germany. And they get the message. Karmis will call it ESP, extrasensory perception. And we will call it Krishna Intel, Pentium and Intel. So this is Krishna Intel. Krishna's inside us and he tells us what's happening. KIT, KIT, Krishna Intel. Krishna's within our heart, Paramatma. Antaryami means one who's ayami, one who's gone inside. So he's gone in our heart and he tells us what's going on. We can figure it out. Vishnu is telling that Krishna sees everything, as he himself tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvato Panipadam Tat Sarvato Kshishiro Mukham. Krishna's Shrutimal. He says, everywhere my hands and legs, everywhere my eyes and faces. So Krishna is everywhere by Paramatma. So Vishnu points out that although the Lord can perform any function with any of his senses, in his transcendental pastimes in Vrindavan as Sri Krishna, he generally sees with his eyes, touches with his hands like any other human being, hears with his ears, and so on. Thus, Krishna Vrindavan, Purushottam Krishna Vrindavan, behaves like the most beautiful and charming young coward boy. Vedic knowledge expands from Brahma, who is described in the first verse of the Bhagavatam as Adi Kavaye, the primeval Vedic scholar. Yet Brahma could not understand the transcendental body of Krishna because it is beyond the reach of ordinary Vedic knowledge. That's interesting. Because he received Vedic knowledge in his heart. Tene Brahma Yadadi Kavaye. Tene Rida Brahma Adi Kavaye. Knowledge was directly injected into his heart. So much knowledge, it says he became acquainted with the ocean of truth. But still, this Krishna Vrindavan, although he understood so much about Vishnu Tattva and Vaikuntha and all the situation of the whole universe and wrote the Brahma Samhita, Krishna Vrindavan was still a little bit beyond his scope of Vedic knowledge. Among all the transcendental forms of the Lord, the two-armed form of Govinda, Krishna, is original and supreme. Thus, Govinda's pastimes of stealing butter, drinking the gopis' breast milk, tending the calves, playing his flute, and playing childhood sports are extraordinary, even in comparison with the activities of Lord Vishnu's expansions. So that's the purport there, and elaborating on the bewilderment. This is part of the Vimohan. In the previous chapter, 13, it's called Brahma Vimohan Leela. And in this chapter, 14, the Brahma Stuti, the prayers, where Brahma is revealing how he came to understand that this little boy in Vrindavan is Param Purushottam, the supreme, topmost form of Godhead. So in this invocatory prayer, his second one of 40 prayers, he's saying that whatever I know, it's only by mercy, anugraha. And even then, he responds to the desires of his pure devotees. And Krishna, by his mercy, because Brahma is also a pure devotee, so Krishna had this leela with him to teach him, and through Brahma to teach the whole world. The Brahma, you, like all the other fantastic personalities of the universe, what to speak of rishis like Durvasa, etc., become bewildered by my pastimes. The greatest yogis and rishis and the greatest scholars and Vedantists, when they see my pastimes in Vrindavan, they quit. They just say, forget it. It's inconceivable. It's a chintya. We don't want to deal with it. There's no Vrindavan. There's no Krishna in Vrindavan. It's only fairy tale. There's Rukmini. You see, in South India, there's temples everywhere of Vishnu. And if there's Krishna with any deity, the only temples you find are Krishna with Rukmini, Dwarka Leela. Although there's some Madhurya there, it's Purna Bhagavan, not Purnatara, Purnatam. It's Krishna, Dwargadish is Krishna, but lots of Aishwarya there, so people can accept that. Yes. We are worshipping Krishna in Dwarka Bhav, in Dwarka Leela. That's why Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar Devotion that this Dwarka Dhyan, to meditate on Krishna's Dwarka Leela and to meditate on the Mahishis or the queens and their relationship, this is pretty cool to Raghunuga Bhakti. This will instill one lots of Aishwarya and will not allow one will be far removed and cast down from Vrindavan into the realm of Dwarka or even Vaikuntha. So these kind of bhavas and meditations, although in other shastras, besides the Bhagavatam and other shastras, it says that sadhakas that are worshipping Vishnu or any form of the Supreme Lord or Supreme God, they should perform Dwarka Dhyan, mudras and Dwarka Dhyan, meditate on Dwarka Leela, and especially the relationship with the Mahishis and Swakiya Bhav. But Rupa Goswami throws it out. He said, no, not for us, the followers of Lord Gauranga. This will actually stifle and cripple our Braja Bhakti and prevent us from getting the mercy of the gopis or developing Gopi Bhav, which Lord Chaitanya came to give. So Brahma prefers to, because you know that Brahma went to Dwarka, that's in the Krishna book, he went to Dwarka Leela. He got bewildered there too. Brahma's having a tough time. So he's getting bewildered. When he went to Dwarka, you know the story. One time, Brahma, our four-headed Brahma, went to Dwarka to visit Dwarkadish, whom he understood as God, all his opulence and thousands of queens and so much regalia and Aishwarya. And because he was familiar with Vishnu, so he didn't have much difficulty, Brahma that is, didn't have much difficulty accommodating Dwarkadish in his brain or his four brains. He could easily understand that this is God. Lots of gold, lots of gems, lots of influence, and a kshatriya, king, powerful king, king of kings, god of gods. When he went there, the Daruka, whoever the guard was, gatekeeper, said, "Who's there?" And he said, "Brahma." And then, Lord Brahma. The servant went to tell Krishna, and Krishna said, "Tell Brahma I'm busy, he should sit and wait." Because there was actually a big lineup. It was Monday morning over there in Dwarka, and lots of demigods came down to get some instructions for the week and start the work week off. Indra was there and Shiva, many people were sitting outside the office waiting to get an appointment with Dwarkadish. So the gatekeeper said, "You just sit here in the waiting room with the other patients and customers, our demigods, and the Lord will deal with you." And then, at the same time, then Brahma said, "No, tell him it's Lord Brahma. It's very important. I have to see him." So then he went and says, "Brahma." Then Krishna could detect some false pride there and foolishness, because he thought he was everything, like most of us. Most everyone in the world thinks they're the center of everything. They're the only one and the biggest one and the center of the whole universe, and everything orbits around their wish and whim, beck and command. So then Krishna sent the Chokidar back and said, "Well, ask Brahma which Brahma he is." And he went back and he said, "Which Brahma are you?" And he said, "What are you talking about, you upstart servant? I'm Brahma, the father of Chatusan. I'm the father of the four Kumaras. This is my universe. You're in my universe. You know who you're talking to?" So he went back and he said, "My lord Dwarkadish, he said he's the four-headed Brahma. You know, he's Brahma, and he's in charge of the universe, and he's the father of the four Kumaras." I said, "All right, you should invite him in. He shouldn't wait any longer." So then Brahma was invited in to meet Krishna in her reception room. And meanwhile, mentally, Krishna thought, "Let me call all the other Brahmas here." So all the Brahmas came from every other universe, and obviously they were big-time Brahmas. They had 8 heads and 16 heads, and some had 1 lakh of heads. So Krishna's Yogamaya and Dwarka arranged for that assembly hall, or wherever it was, Sudharma, wherever it was, the reception hall, to be pretty big, to expand to unlimited proportions to fit all those heads in there, and bodies too. And all those thousands and thousands of Brahmas were all simultaneously offering their obeisances and touching their helmets at the lotus feet of Krishna, and uttering prayers. Brahma, the doorman, opened the door and said, "Here, please meet the Lord." And he stood there, awe. What is this? Imagine going into this huge room that's like 10 miles long and 5 miles wide. And there's millions of guys that look just like you. But they have so many heads and it just spins your head around. So Brahma, his heads were spinning in 5 directions, 4 directions. At the time, he thought within himself as he gazed upon all the unlimited Brahmas, and they're all humbly offering their heads at the feet of Krishna. Then he realized how insignificant and meaningless he was. Like, he said, "What am I compared to all these Brahmas? I'm like a fly. I'm like a mosquito among elephants." That's quite a difference in size, a mosquito and an elephant. I mean, one hair on the back of an elephant is bigger than a mosquito. And an elephant weighs tons, and kilos, I can't even figure out. So Brahma is regularly getting bewildered by Krishna's Nara Leela here, even when Krishna appears almost like God in Dwarka. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we have already heard his purport, but we can see if there's any further elaboration. And from reading this purport, I was reminded that we should also, as we've done in previous years in classes, to consult Prabhupada's Krishna book, because he only did verse by verse up to 13th chapter, and now we're discussing 14th chapter, which is continued by his disciples. But he did actually write purports, interestingly enough, to almost every verse of the 10th canto. And those tikkas and purports are included in the Krishna book. And with a little attentiveness, you can go through the BBT Bhagavatam with the Sanskrit verses and hold the Krishna book side by side and put in marker or whatever, mark off where the verses are and write in the margin. This is verse 5. And this is verse 6. Well, everything in all those paragraphs of commentaries between verse 5 and 6 are the commentary in verse 5. So we'll do that preparation, because there's a lot of interesting insight, and the language Prabhupada uses is extremely attractive. And oftentimes, in previous years, we've given classes and read side by side Prabhupada's phrasing in a purport of the Krishna book versus his disciples. And I say, which wording do you like more? Maybe people are biased, but most of us say, oh, I like Prabhupada's phrases more. Of course, needless to say, that's obviously our own conclusion, that Prabhupada is the best in all circumstances. So we have here in the Sarta Darshini the purport of Vishnu, and it seems quite long compared to the summary that the VVT has included in their edition of the Bhagavatam. So we'll read here. Hearing Brahma's praises, Krishna may object, because he's a little boy, and Brahma's, as you often hear in Govinda Lilamrita and Krishna Bhavanamrita, every afternoon at between this time between 3:36 and 6, when Krishna's returning from the pastures with all the cows, it's Uttara. It's called Uttara Goshta. Uttara Goshta Lila. Uttara Goshta means to return back home to Nandagram. Then all the demigods come down to purify themselves by bathing in the Goduli and the dust of the feet of Krishna's cows, and Krishna's walking behind the cows also, and the dust is falling on his body and his own feet, bare feet, beautiful lotus feet, Vrindavanam Sapadaramanam. They're kicking up a little transcendental Brajaraj also. So demigods come to purify themselves by bathing in that Brajaraj and Charna Raj of Krishna, Krishna Charna Raj. And moreover, they want to purify their existence by offering stutis and stotrams to Krishna. So they come down, they assemble, and they fold their hands and start praying, offering so many Sanskrit verses perfectly composed with chandas and meter and rag and everything. And Krishna is simply leaning on his cow-herding stick, completely uninterested and bored. And he's a little disturbed because they're delaying his return to the Goshala, and Krishna knows the calves are eagerly waiting to meet their mothers, and he's also eagerly waiting to see the gopis on the road when he goes through Varsana. He wants to catch a sidelong glance of a gopi in a palace, or maybe even a few brief interlude with Radharani in one of the roadside kunjas. Will be arranged by some of the Manjaris. So he's a little anxious. He has something, he's a little preoccupied. Something else is on his mind except hearing some Uttama Shloka, great verses and shlokas glorifying him as this and that and the cause of all causes and the creator and the controller and destroyer and maintainer and the do-gooder and the good guy and this and that. So sometimes he's leaning his shoulder on the, and Subal's looking at him and said, Krishna, what are they saying? Do you have any idea? So I don't know. Madhu Mangal was translating something the other day, but I don't know. I haven't gone to Gurukul. I don't know Sanskrit. I'm supposed to, maybe I go in the future when I grow up, but I mean, I'm a kid now. I'm not going to, I haven't even been to any school. You have to grow up before you go to school. Krishna didn't go to, and where, what school he went to in Vrindavan? He went to Sandi Pani Muni School in Vrindavan? There's some school there in Vrindavan called Sandi Pani Muni School. Or did he go to the intermediate school or the beginning school or nursery school or primary school or secondary? No school. He simply played for 10 years. Forget about going to school when you're 2 years old or something. He played for 10 years and then he went to Mathura, and the first thing his father said, "Oh, you, do you know how to, you know Sanskrit?" And he said, "No, I just play my flute and everything happens. I just play a flute." He said, no, put that thing away. That's not going to work over here. This is Mathura, Puri. This is a big city. You have to know Sanskrit and puja and so many things. 64 arts you have to know. I said, "What's 64 arts? What is this?" "I know the art of playing the flute and dancing and milking cows and what more?" No. "You're my son. You have to be properly educated. Get Upanayanam and all this." He went to an Ivy League school and private school. He sent him away to a private school in Ujjain, very costly private school, and he was a little nervous, so he took Balaram with him, so they lived together in the hostel, but they were thinking, "I don't want to stay very long over here," so they finished their education in 2 months. In 64 days they learned everything they needed to know. And that would certainly be a good lesson. I wish I learned that lesson. I wish I knew about Krishna when I was a young boy and quit school after 64 days. I would have learned a lot more and received a lot less anxiety and frustration by hanging around with all these goofball knucklehead teachers for so many days. How many days were in school? Eighth grade, kindergarten and eighth grade, that's 9, and high school is 4 is 13, and college is 4 is 17, and 20 years in school, from kindergarten to graduate to degree, from kindergarten to degree. By the time you get your degree, you've gone through the third degree. You've been burned and fried and roasted and tossed and turned and lifted and dropped, and nothing left of you after 20 years of slaughterhouse brainwashing education. And you go an average of 10 months a year of school, so that's 300 days a year times 20, 6,000 days. So 6,000 days of slaughterhouse, useless, mindless education. After all those 6,000 days, did you learn the 64 arts? No. You maybe learned how to hit some keys on a computer and make a few dollars in the marketplace. But anything practical, you didn't learn anything practical, nothing useful, nothing interesting, nothing entertaining, nothing useless, mechanical knowledge. Now Krishna wrapped up his whole education in 2 months, 64 days. That's a nice way to go to college. So, unfortunately, it's always easier to look back in retrospect. I wish I was as lucky as Krishna. He went 64 days to school, I went 6,000 days, like most everybody else in the world. So I could have finished it all in 64 days. I live forever in the spiritual world with Krishna. That's all the education you need. All you need to know is chant, dance, and take prasadam. How do you chant? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Okay. Now how do you dance? Dance? It's simple. Raise your two arms over your head, just straight up. Open your fingers. And then just step to the left. Left foot over right foot over left foot, and sway to the right and sway to the left. Okay, that's pretty easy dance. Not very complicated. Now I have chanting and dancing. Now what this other thing is called prasad, taking prasad. Yes, that's the easiest of all. You simply sit on the floor and eat, and eat, and eat, and eat, until your sikha falls off, until your sikha falls off. And then when it falls off, you glue it back on and go to sleep. And when you wake up, you chant and dance some more. That's it. Prabhupada was once meeting with some devotees in L.A., and he said, if you're a brahmachari your whole life, you're 50% back to Godhead. You can go back to God at 50%, you're already there. And all the brahmacharis hung their head down. They all hung their heads down, a little bit embarrassed, a little bit, you know, shy, and like, oh, gee. And then, because most of them, or most of us, were not urdhvaretas, brahmacharis for a whole life, and hardly brahmacharis at all, or whatever, then Prabhupada said, but Krishna is very merciful. Krishna is very merciful to anyone who tries to serve him. So then all the brahmacharis picked their heads up. Then one devotee said, Prabhupada, can I ask a question? He said, yes. He said, you said 50% is brahmacharya. If you maintain brahmacharya or vow of celibacy for your whole life, then you're 50% back to Godhead. Well, what's the other 50%? And Prabhupada said, chanting Hare Krishna and taking prasad. Then all the brahmacharis said, Jai Prabhupada! So Krishna is merciful, so that'll compensate for a helter-skelter brahmacharya. And then we simply chant and take prasadam, and bingo, we're going back home, back to Godhead. Ananda Kanda Bhagavan Sri Krishna Ki Jai. So hearing these praises from Brahma, Krishna may object. Listen, Lord Brahma, what are you saying about me? I'm a little kid. This is my Poganda Leela. I'm only 5 years old. I don't even know how to eat properly. You're from Devalok, Satyalok. You know all proper manners and etiquette and how to walk and talk and sit and eat and all kinds of how to speak with high words and highfalutin words and expert Sanskrit shlokas. All I know is how to curse my echo. When I go into caves in Kamyavan, I say, hey, hey. And I hear that echo. I say, hey, you dirty old man, what are you doing in there? Hey, you dirty old man. Oh. So we just we speak curse words when you hear our echo come back from the dried well in the field, the abandoned well. But who's speaking? What are you saying? Do you realize what you're saying, Brahma? Listen, Brahma, you are the master of all powers in this universe. Well, I'm simply the son of a coward man in the forest. I'm an Adivasi. I'm just living in the forest. I don't even live in a city. Everyone knows that civilized people live in the cities. All the jungle people, what do you call it? Abos, the Aborigines, they think it's short for Aborigines. In Australia or whatever, maybe wherever they are. Abos means the Aborigines. They have blowguns and big bones in their lips and stuff, and they do all kinds of funny things. The tribals, the Aborigines. The Adivasis, the original residents of the jungle, the Jungleese. So I'm like one of those. I'm a forest man. And you even said in your prayer, you said, Pashupa Anga Jaya. Said, you yourself in your prayer, you're glorifying me. So you're the son of a protector of the animals, Nanda Maharaj. I'm the son of a coward man in the forest. You are an ancient and exalted personality. Look at your beard. It's long. It's gray. You're as old as the hills. You're really old. You're millions of years old. I'm just 5 years old. I'm a kid. You have like PhD, 10 PhDs and so many degrees in this university and that university. I never went to school. Do you know what you're talking about? I'm a small boy. You are knowledgeable of all the Vedas and endowed with the most exemplary conduct. You don't eat with your left hand like me. You don't walk around and eat with monkeys like me. I sit down with the monkeys and I put the yogurt and rice in my left hand. And in your circle, if you see something like that, you faint. Huh? What is this? Oh, how dirty, how uncultured, how uncivilized, and primitive. He's eating like a monkey. He's sitting with the monkeys. The monkeys eat with two hands without any idea of niyam or yama. And this boy who's the son of Nanda Maharaj, he's eating like a monkey. So Brahma, you're endowed with all exemplary conduct. But I am an ignorant keeper of cows. I'm Pashubuddhi. I have a cow brain. Pashubuddhi means an animal brain. And I'm unaware of proper conduct. That I run around with some yogurt rice in my left hand. You, however, Brahma, you are the Supreme Lord, full of bliss, bliss, and the controller of all illusion. But me, I'm a little kid. I'm bewildered by your illusion, and I wander about the forest grieving over my lost calves. Because you stole my calves, I'm crying, oh, where's Hamshi? Where's Davali? Where's Chandani? Where's Gangay? Where's Saraswati? Oh, where are you? Thus, I'm not qualified to receive your exalted praises. Fearing such objections from Krishna, Brahma spoke this verse, repenting for having offended Krishna due to his ignorance. Brahma says, Vishnath is repeating this verse in his tika, oh, my dear Krishna, I cannot estimate avisitam, which is a word from the verse, the greatness of your transcendental body, engaging in childish play. What to speak of your pastimes of youth, Kishore? Because now Krishna is a little boy, he's 5 years old. And Brahma is saying, I don't understand your Pogonda Leela. What to speak of when you grow up and exhibit your Kishore Leela with the gopis and running around with the wives of other men's husbands? I can't understand what you do when you're a little kid. What to speak of when you grow up? You talk about illusion. If I cannot understand the transcendental potency of your transcendental body, then how could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself by herding the calves? I cannot comprehend the happiness your coward friends feel. What to speak of the happiness you experience by directly playing with them? Imagine Brahma getting down and crawling on his hands and knees and wrestling with the coward boys. Highly unlikely. If a person with a controlled mind cannot understand that happiness, what can be said of those with uncontrolled minds? This is the paraphrasing of Brahma's verse here, number 2 in 10.14. Now Vishnath interjects. In this way, Brahma expresses 5 levels of ignorance. I mean, that's really, really steeped in ignorance. 5 levels of ignorance. Brahma described Krishna's body in this way to prove that the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, cannot be understood by yoga, austerity, or shastric study, not by tapa, gyan, or yoga. Krishna is understood only by mercy, anugraha. Brahma continued, my dear Lord Krishna, although I offended you, due to your magnanimity, you have shown such mercy to me. That mercy consisted of revealing your sweet human form after showing your awesome Vishnumurtis. So Brahma saw with his own eyes, in one place, the combination of the Supreme Aishwarya and the Supreme Madhurya, all originating from Krishna and Vrindavan, Sri Krishna Purushottam, all these Vishnumurtis and then all the coward boys. What is the cause of that mercy of yours? Your body is swaichchamaya, as this is a phrase from the Sanskrit verse. Your body appears in this world in response to the desires of your pure devotees who want to see and serve you. You show mercy out of affection for your devotees. Though I am an offender, because I have a semblance of devotion, I become qualified to receive a drop of your mercy. Vishnath says, Chakravartipad, patiently listening to Brahma, Krishna replied, Brahma, but to fulfill desires and show mercy, these are also traits of human beings. Brahma responded, but my Lord, your body is not material, your body is spiritual, Deva Vapu. Brahma Samhita says, Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti, pashyanti panti kalayanti charam jaganti, Ananda chinma sarujvala vigrahasya Govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Brahma prayed. Vishwanath is citing that in his Tika, verse 2. Every part of Krishna's body has all the potencies of other parts of the body. This verse from Brahma Samhita, said Vishwanath, shows not only that Krishna can perform any bodily function with any of his limbs, but also that he can see through the eyes of his Vishnu expansions. And similarly, he can hear through the ears of any Vishnu expansion. Although the Lord can perform any function with any one of his senses, in his transcendental pastimes, as Govinda, he generally sees with his eyes, touches with his hands, hears with his ears, etc. Brahma continued, "My Lord, you have shown me the form of Vasudev, Devavap." That's interesting, because the Sanskrit verse is Devavapu, which has been translated as your Deva means Divya, or Deva means your transcendental form. And Vishwanath is saying this Devavapu means, Brahma is saying, "You show me the form of Vasudev," because Vasudev is the Aishwarya Rupa of Krishna, Vasudev Krishna. That's what he saw. He saw Vishnu with four arms. When Krishna goes to the battlefield of Kurukshetra, it's called Vasudev Krishna, the son of Vasudev and Devaki, Devaki Nandan. And he has four arms. But here he's Yashoda Nandan, Nandala, only two arms, a sweet Madhurya form. So Deva Vapu means Vasudev. The word Deva refers to Vasudev, the father of Krishna Mathura, where he exhibits his four-armed form even at the time of birth. "You bestowed mercy by teaching me the four verses," this is Brahma's Chatushloki of Bhagavatam. "To fulfill your desires, Ichamaya, your transcendental body is a source of these Vasudeva forms, Swa. Though your body fulfills your desires, it is spiritual, not like our bodies, which are products of matter, Bhutamaya. I cannot estimate the potency of your spiritual body, even though I have revealed the Vedas and study the fruit of the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam. I cannot even understand," because Krishna spoke the Chatushloki of the Bhagavatam in second canto of the Brahma. So that's his nutshell verses, its summary of the whole Bhagavatam. And he studied them and understood, but still he didn't understand. It didn't give him the... Even his study of those shlokas and of the Bhagavatam at that point did not give him knowledge of Krishna and Vrindavan. "I cannot even understand the greatness of your Vasudeva forms, what to speak of the greatness of the original source of those transcendental forms, the two-armed form of Govinda. In this topmost of transcendental forms, as an innocent coward boy, you intensely relish the pastimes of stealing butter, drinking the gopis' breast milk, tending the cows, playing your flute, and enjoying your transcendental pranks, which are extraordinary, even in comparison with the activities of your Vishnu expansions." Well, this is the Tika of Vishnu Chakravartipad. This is text 3. A very famous verse, Prabhupada often quotes the first line. "Jnane prayasam urupasya namante va jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiya vartam stane stita srutikatam tannu vanmano bir ye prayasho jita jitopi yasi taistrilokyam." Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge, and with their bodies, words, and mind, offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, these persons, they can certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise ajit, unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. In other words, someone who absorbs himself in Hari Katha, Hari Guna Katha, Hari Lila Katha, Hari Nam Katha, He can enter into the mysteries of the understanding of Krishna through the agency of devotion. Bhakti mamva vijananti yavanyash chasmi tatvataha. The access to Krishna's inconceivable personality is bhakti and bhakti alone. So what is bhakti? Bhakti is takes nine shapes or five shapes or one shape of Nam Sankirtan, Ekanga Bhakti, Nam Sankirtan, or Panchanga Bhakti, Mathura Vas, living in Mathura Vrindavan, Sarasanga, Bhagavad Shravan, hearing Bhagavatam, chanting the holy name and serving the deity with faith. These are the Panchanga Bhakti. But it's bhakti, it's devotional practices. Here, Brahma is saying that Jnane Prayasam Udapasya Namanteva, and by the endeavors of Jnana, we will fall flat on our face. Jnane Prayasam, like we have Shreyas and Prayas. As you know, you've heard this term. Shreyas means long-term endeavor, long-term benefit. And Prayas means short-term benefit, or immediate activities, quickly performed activities. Prabhupada uses the analogy that a child, he thinks that playing in the sandbox is very good. He'd rather play all day. This is beneficial and beneficial to him. So that's Shreyas. It gives immediate benefit, sense enjoyment. But if the parents don't stop that Prayas and engage the child in Shreyas, Shreyas is long-term benefit. Long-term benefit means he takes him out of the playing, stops his playing and stops his, takes him out of the sandbox and enrolls him in school and drags him off to school away from the playground, gets him off the swings and makes him drop his toys and pushes him out the door to the school bus. If he simply plays and whittles his life away, when he grows up he'll have no qualification, education, degree or ability to make any money. So he'll be a thief, a beggar. But rather, if he goes to school, his mother says, listen, it's not much fun, it's a drag. No one likes school. It's a pain, it's a headache, it's austere. But it's good in the long run, we say that. Krishna says the same thing in Gita about sadhana bhakti. What is poison in the beginning is nectar in the end. So it's difficult to rise up every day at 4 o'clock, especially for some people. But if we're serious about the long-term benefit of following the orders of the spiritual master, which means to realize Krishna, attain perfection, and go back to Godhead, then we'll rise to the call and act accordingly. But if we simply want to accept short-term benefits of the pleasure of sleeping and eating, then we will pay the price by not attaining perfection nor advancing on the path of bhakti. So Shreyas and Prayas are there everywhere. Jnane Priyasam Udupasya Namanteva. So he's saying this endeavor of knowledge, collecting knowledge and studying, you should give it up. Udupasya. You should give it up and offer obeisances to what? Namanta, namaste, jivanti san mukaritam, bhavadiya vartam. Bhavadiya varta means topics. Krishna kata, Hari kata, what should we do? Namanta, jivanti. We should live with Hari kata and we should offer obeisances to those san mukaritam, to those pure devotees. Sat means sat mukha. Sat mukha means the mouth of a sat, the mouth of a sadhu. Satam prasangam mama virya samvido. A sadhu will glorify Krishna and Lord Gauranga and the holy name. San mukharita means sat mukh. Sat mukharitam. He will speak from his mouth the glories of Krishna and Radha and Gauranga and Panchatattva and Krishna Leela and Gaur Leela. We should offer obeisances there. Just throw away this idle, futile pursuit of accumulating knowledge of God, the Aroha Panta, ascending process, sending your ass upwards, ascending, right? Ascending process. And just rather sit on your asan. Sit on your asan and receive knowledge in the descending way, parampara. Evam parampara praptam imam rajasya vidu. This is called avaroha panta. That knowledge, avaroha, like avatar, which descends. So Upasanam, we do Krishna Upasanam, Guru Upasanam. We sit on our asan. We don't send our asan up or ass up by ascending process. It's a descending process. We sit next to Guru. Upasana means to sit. Upa means near or close to. Asana means seat. So we sit near the Guru and we hear Harikata from him. We sit near the saints, Sanmukharitam, Nandamanta, Namaste. We offer obeisances, throw away the pursuit of knowledge, Jnane Priyasimurupasya Namante Iva. Then, Jivanti Sanmukharitam Bhavadiya Vartam, Stane Sita Shrutikatam Tanvan Manobir, then Tanvan Man. Then with our Tano body, Van or Vak words and Manobir with the strength and power of our minds, then we serve and worship these topics. Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge, and with their body, minds, and words, Tanu, Van, Manobir, offer all respects, Namanta, to Harigata, descriptions of your personality of Godhead. And if one dedicates themselves to hearing such narrations and repeating such narrations, which will you vibrate yourself and your pure devotees, then such a person will conquer the unconquerable Lord, Ajita. Krishna is conquered by love and love alone. This is a purport, BBT's purport here. Udapasya, which Udapasya means giving up completely. This indicates that one should not even slightly endeavor to understand the absolute truth by the process of mental speculation. For mental speculation, or using our powers of powers of analyzation, or examining, or observation, or logic, or reason, it invariably carries one to an imperfect, impersonal understanding of God. The word in this verse, jivanti, to live, indicates that pure devotee always lives near Harikata. His ears are always living with the saints. Jivanti. Jivanti means live and to receive life. Jiva. The Jivatma, the living being, the living consciousness, living entity. Namanta Jivanti. Namanta Eva Jivanti. So we always hear about Krishna, and then by doing such activity, one will go back home, back to Godhead, where he can live Jivanti eternally in the association of the Lord and one of the loving rasas. Even if this person can do nothing but maintain his existence and hear Harikatha, he will go back to Godhead. Simply maintain your existence. Radhe, Radhe, Maya, Maya, Radhe, Radhe. Acha, Baba, Roti, Ha. Chach, buttermilk chaye, ha, tiffin baldo. Put in my tiffin. A little buttermilk, a little roti. And then you take it to your kutir and you offer that roti and buttermilk to your Giriraj Shila, Govardhan Shila. Then you take that Maha Prasad, and then you chant some mala. Then you go to the class, you go to the Harikata. And that's all. Just maintain your existence, either by a simple job, easy job, get a little money, or by Madhukari begging. And hear Harikata. Nothing more required. No difficult tapa or brata or gyan or studying Sanskrit for 12 years to learn Kavi and Naya and Itihas and all these things. And Sahitya. Literature is Sahitya and Kavi is poetry and Vyakaran is grammar and Itihas is history and Jyotish and all these things. Forget it. Tat Srinu. Just hear me and hear about me. And you'll get perfection. Arjuna told Krishna this in the Gita. Tat Srinu, just hear. Srinu, Shravanam. Shravanam Siddhi. Shravanam Siddhi. Who attained perfection by hearing? Krishna Katha. Maharaj Parikshit. Simple process. Lie down the banks of Ganga and die. Just lie down and die. And that was really simple. He didn't have to do much to maintain his material existence. Because he didn't drink any water. He didn't eat any prasadam for 7 days. He just drank the Harikata. Nigama Kalpataroya. Pibanti, Rasayana Kata, Rasayana, Karna Rasayana Kata, Pibanti. He simply drank the Rasayana Kata of Bhagavat Ras, Krishna Ras, Leela Ras, Kirtan Ras, I mean Leela Ras, about Krishna's pastimes in the Bhagavatam, and he attained all perfection, went back home, back to Godhead. Sanatana Goswami in his Tika, he says this phrase, Tano Van Manobir, like we often hear the Pandas say, Mantan Dan Guru Samarpan. Mantan Dan Guru Samarpan. Mantan Tano Tano Tanoja. Ai Nanda Tanoja Kinkaram. Tanoja. Tano means body, ja means born from. Nanda. One is born from the body of Nanda. So Tano means, like we say, Deva Vapu. Vapu means body. Guru Vapu, Guru Vani. And Tano also means, and Rupa means. So Tano, body, Van, words, Manobi. Sanatana says that Brahma's prayer here, number 3, chapter 14, these words, Stane stita shrutikatam tanuvan manobhir. These three words, body, words, and mind, it says he's explained these words in three ways. The three words he explained in three ways. This phrase, tanu, body, van, words, mano, mind, in reference to devotees. So it has a reference to devotees. Through their body, words, and mind, they are able to conquer Krishna. Thus becoming perfect in Krishna consciousness, they can touch Krishna's lotus feet with their hands and call him to come with their words and attain his direct audience within their minds simply by thinking of him. Very interesting how he explains it. And all these three words, it's give and take. As you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. So a very devotional way, a very devotional tika Sanatana Goswami Pada is given here. By saying it's not just that you give your ears, you give your body, tanu, and your words, van or vak, and mind to Krishna, by concentrating and hearing with rapt attention the Hari Katha. Your body is there in the Bhagavatam class. That's your tano. You're sitting attentively. And your van, your words, you're hearing something of the Bhagavatam and speaking it. And then your mind is fixed on concentrating on the Hari Katha and understanding what it means and trying to see it in leelas and feel the experiences of the devotees. So that's from the devotee side. But then he's saying that that's the devotee's giving that, but then he's getting something. When he gives his body, mind, and words to Krishna, then he captures Krishna. And then what happens? Then they get to interact with Krishna's body, mind, and words. They can conquer by this process of concentrated hearing and serving. Then they conquer Lord Krishna. They become perfect in Krishna consciousness. So perfect in Krishna consciousness, that means bhav and prema. Madhurya Kandamani explains how sometimes the devotees, when they're absorbed in Krishna at the level of bhav, they faint. And then Krishna comes and he speaks to them in their ears. And then if they're in different rasas, and he holds their hand or he kisses their lips or whatever. So when they're at the level of prema, they get spurtis of the Lord. Visions and interactions, spurtis, and then sakshat darshan. When the devotee faints in the ecstasies of his bhavas and ecstatic feelings of prema, while he's doing his bhajan, he may swoon in ecstasy. Then Lord will come and kneel next to him, whisper in his ear, "Oh, my devotee, please wake up." Or the Lord may stroke his chest with his hands, or he may hold his hand. If someone is in Sakiras, Krishna holds his hand. If someone is in Vatsalyaras, Krishna may come and kiss his cheek, like he kisses his mother. If someone's in Madhurya Ras, he may give him a loving embrace. Krishna tells us the interaction of the devotees at the level of prema. So that with our ears, we're hearing Krishna's words. With our body, we're feeling his body. And with our mind, we're thrilled with that experience. And when that happens, we can never forget it. Like Vilap Kusumanjali, Raghunath Das is reveling and remembering all the sportis he had with the Lord and Radharani during the course of his Manasi Seva, and he entered the Leela, come back with those sweet memories within his mind, relishing those different ecstasies when recounting them. and crying out in separation, a vilap of lamentation. Oh, I was brushing Radharani's hair and I lost that service. I saw her, I smelled the fragrance of her hair. Oh, when will I have that opportunity again? So Sanatan so beautifully opens up this verse and says that when a devotee attains perfection, bhava and prema, then they can touch, because we're talking, he says, because the verse says that devotees, they, with their body, words, and mind, they offer all respects to your description of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to your narrations. So this is, they're hearing these leelas, Bhagavatam and other leela granths, rasa granths, and they're offering respects with their body and their reverentially, respectfully thinking in their minds, and they may glorify such topics to others. But moreover, that's for the neophyte devotee or the sadhana bhakta. But the prema bhakta, he has a direct personal relationship with the Lord through his tan, van, manubir. Says that when devotees are perfect, they can touch his lotus feet with their hands. You read in Vishwanath Chakravarti's Sankalpa Kalpa Juma that he's having spurti of Radharani. He said, Radharani, when you're lying in the kunja, when will I massage your feet ever so tenderly with my hands as you're lying with Krishna in the kunja? And I'll look at those beautiful, sweet lotus feet with the reddish bottoms like lotuses and golden top. And then I'll cry and I'll bathe your lotus feet with the tears in my eyes and I'll dry them with my hair. And then I'll dry them with my hair, long, silky, black hair. Then I will press your lotus feet against my breast. Then I will look to see if anyone is looking. If no other sakis are looking, then I will kiss those lotus feet. So this is the experience he has in his meditation at the level of prema. He's touching. Here it says they can touch his lotus feet with their hands or Radharani's feet or kiss them. They can call Krishna to come with their words. Krishna, kotai. Kotai go prema mayi radhe radhe. Gorakishore was wandering all around Vrindavan. He was calling kotai prema mayi radha kotai mayi radha prema mayi radha kotai. Where are you? Are you in Nidiban? Are you in Sevakunj? Are you in Shamakunj, Radhakunj? He's calling out. Radhe, Radhe, Kotaigo Prema Mai, Radhe, Radhe, Ashtashaki Shiromani, Radhe, Radhe, Kano Manu Mohani, Radhe, Radhe, Brishabhanu Nandini, Radhe, Radhe, Kotaigo Prema Mai. So he's calling out. So with their words, Van, they can call out to the Lord or to Radharani. And they can attain direct audience within their mind simply by thinking of him. This is a spurti. Sakshat darshan is direct. Sakshat darshan is sakshat, direct audience or direct darshan of Krishna outside their mind, standing in front of him. As Dhruva Maharaj saw in Madhavan forest outside of Mathura, and standing in Dhruva Tila, doing his austerities for 6 months, he was seeing and meditating on Chaturbhuj Narayan within his heart, and was chanting the mantra that Narada Muni gave him. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And Dhruva saw within his heart Chaturbhuj Narayan, that Vasudev Narayan, beautiful smiling feature, standing on a lotus flower, gently smiling at Dhruva Maharaj. He saw that in his mind, and he was starting to swoon within his internal meditation. Such a beautiful darshan, antardrishti. He was seeing in his meditation the Lord of his heart, the Lord of his mantra. He was attaining mantra siddhi. Then he started to faint, close his eyes. And when he opened his eyes, he saw that Chaturbhuj Narayan had come out of his heart and was giving him sakshat darshan. So he went from spurti to sakshat darshan. And devotees on the level of prema, they can have darshan within their mind in a very real, practically hands-on, touchable experience of Visporti, it seems so real, you can reach out and touch Krishna, but it's all happening within the recesses of your manobi, within your mind, locked in meditation, entering the Lila Pravesh. But also the devotee can have his eyes wide open and Krishna can appear. Ah, Krishna, you can see him, or Radha, and faint. So they can attain direct audience within their mind simply by thinking about him. In the case of non-devotees, the words Tanu, Van, Manobi refer to the word Ajita, unconquered, and indicate that those that are not engaged, or the devotees have this experience with their mind, body, and words. But the non-devotees, this verse, Brahma is telling something to them. Non-devotees also have body, mind, and words. But because they're not dedicated to Krishna's service, they're not absorbed in hearing Harikatha, nor surrendered to the Lord or his devotees, and doing Namanta, Jivanta. They're not doing Namanta Sanmukharitam. They're not offering respects and obeisances to the Sat, to the Sadhus, and humbly, submissively hearing them with rapt attention, the beautiful, sweet Harikatha flowing from their lotus mouths. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitite Koriya Aikya. They're not surrendered to Guru. They're not hearing from the saints or sadhus. And they think, oh, without this process of bhakti, I can, by my body, mind, and words, I can conquer the Lord. I can figure him out. I can understand him. I know Sanskrit. I know logic. I know Naya. No, you can't. So the non-devotees say the words Tanu, Van, Manobi refer to the word Ajita in the same verse, unconquered, and indicate that those who are not engaged in Krishna bhakti, they cannot conquer Ajita Krishna. No matter how much bodily strength they exhibit, Tanu, or how much verbal expertise, Van, or how much mental power. Despite all their endeavors, the ultimate truth remains beyond their reach. In reference to the word Jita, or conquered, in the Sanskrit verse, the words Tanu, Van, Manobi indicate that pure devotees of the Lord conquer Krishna's body, words, and mind. Krishna's body is conquered because he always remains by the side of his pure devotees. So these three words are significant. Tan man, van, Krishna samarpan, tan, van, man, guru samarpan, with body, words, and mind. This is the sannyasi. He takes this sannyasa order, then he has a tridanda, which represents mano, kaya, vakya. Mano, kaya, vakya. Kaya means kalevaram, also means tanu, body. With his danda, he's all lined up together vertically, all parallel rather. So his body is in line with his mind. His mind is in line with his words. They're all in alignment. They're not out of balance. Like our cars, sometimes the wheels get out of alignment and the car wobbles and goes off course. It's hard to steer it and keep it on the track, keep it on the road, because the wheels are out of alignment. Had to get our wheels aligned. The sannyasi is supposed to be in perfect alignment with the will of the Lord and wish of the Lord. Tridandi. And if he starts to get out of line, if his mind gets out of line, or his body gets out of line, or his words get out of line, then he takes that stick and beats them. Beats his mind with that stick. Hey, get back in line. You need a mental alignment, a verbal alignment, a body alignment. Your body's out of alignment. You're going wacky. You're going off the course of Bhakti Marg. You're not steering straight. So this is... says that because these words are connected to Jita, so the pure devotees, they conquer Krishna's mind, words, and body. That's what love is all about. Love means, they say, love conquers all. If someone loves someone, then what do you win? If you really love someone, they love you. You win their body. If you conquer someone, that means you win. You get the prize. You get the gold. You get their estate. You get their land, you get their armies, you get their queens, you get everything. You get them, you put them in prison, make them your minister, make them your slave. You conquer them. So you conquer the person's... Of course, it's difficult to conquer someone's mind, even though you may conquer their body and conquer their words, and they say, yes, yes, you're my boss. So you conquer them. They're submitting to you that you're the conqueror. Yes, yes, you're my emperor, and you have my body, and I'm serving you. But in my mind, I think you're a jerk. I can't stand you, and I never think of you or care anything for you. But you have me enslaved. You've enslaved and captured and imprisoned my body. I've become your wife or your husband, so I have no recourse. I'm in prison. So now you've imprisoned my body and imprisoned my words, because if I don't say yes, sir, and I love you, and I'll do whatever you say, then I get a smack and a crack, and I go to the prison. But the mind may be far away, somewhere else. But the devotee is something different, because he has pure love without exploitation or calculation. He simply wants to please Krishna with every thought, word, and deed, with all of his thinking. And thought, word, and deed, we have this expression in the Bible. Love the Lord thy Father with every thought, word, and deed. That's the same thing. Tanu van manobi. Deed means tanu. Deed means actions you perform with your body. Deeds, karma, actions. Love the Lord thy Father, Lord thy God, with every thought, mano, word, van, deed, tanu. Deed means actions, karmendriya. We have the karmendriya, the panch karmendriya and panch gyanendriya. The body is made of working senses, and it works and does things according to the dictates of the mind. Of thoughts, words, and deeds. Christians have the same concept in the Bible. This is love. Love means my body loves you and serves you. Love means my mind loves you and serves you. Love means my words love you and serve you. So devotees in this way, they conquer the Lord with their love, loving service of their body, mind, and words. The pure devotees of the Lord conquer Krishna's, they conquer Krishna's words, mind. Krishna's body is conquered by the pure devotees because Krishna comes and stands with his body right next on the side of the pure devotees. And the disciple conquers his guru in the same way. As the disciple serves his guru with full attachment, with all his words, always glorifying guru and speaking on behalf of guru, and his body, and always carrying out quickly and diligently and expertly the orders of the guru, and his mind always thinking of the guru's happiness and satisfaction, and he conquers the guru. And the guru is always with him, and he always feels the presence of his guru. When Prabhupada was in New York, the devotees asked him, Srila Prabhupada, your spiritual master entered Nitya Lila 1937, January 1st. Now this is 1967 in New York, 2nd Avenue. It's 30 years since you've seen your guru, or more. Do you feel lonely? Do you feel separation from your guru? Do you feel alone? And Prabhupada said, my guru is always with me. I never feel separated from my guru for 1 minute. I'm always living with my guru. How is that possible? Because Prabhupada loved his guru. He's in pure love. Guru Bhakti. We talk about Guru Bhakti. Well, certainly Prabhupada had the greatest Guru Bhakti. He had 100% faith in the words of his guru. He told us such. And he said, oh, Swamiji, you have such fantastic success. What do you attribute your success to? And he said, you're so intelligent. You've organized such a wonderful society. You're such a great preacher and scholar. No. It's nothing of my own doing. You have it all wrong. Do you know why I'm successful? Because of two things. I have complete faith. I always tried my best to have complete faith in the orders of my spiritual master, and complete faith in the holy name of Krishna. So by the mercy of Krishna and Guru, all these wonderful, fantastic spiritual successes have been done. Guru Kripa Hi Kevalam, Krishna Kripa Hi Kevalam. It's only by the mercy of Krishna and Guru that all this has been accomplished. And what you're recognizing is some wonderful deed that has happened through me. Simply, I'm the agent of their mercy. So in this way, the guru, the Krishna, the pure devotees conquer Krishna with their bodies fully surrendered, engaged in Krishna's service, and they conquer Krishna with their bodies. And Krishna says, "Listen, I want to be with you. You love me so much. You want to serve me so much. I want to live with you. Wherever you go, I'll be right by your side, just like Bhakti Siddhanta was right by Prabhupada's side in New York. He said, he's right here. You don't see him." So on the Jaladuta, Krishna was right there by Prabhupada's side. And Prabhupada had two heart attacks. And Was Krishna somewhere else? Was he in Vrindavan running around Govardhan? He's right there. He said, Prabhupada, look. Swamiji, he wasn't Prabhupada then. It's Swamiji. Swamiji, I'm with you. It's Janmashtami. You just celebrated Janmashtami and cooked khichdi in the ship's kitchen. I distributed my Mahaprasad to all the captain and all the boat people. You're always serving me with your body and cooking for me and walking for me and talking for me. Now you're in difficulty. Some heart attack is there. Look, see? I'm standing next to your bed. I'm massaging your heart. Prabhupada had an experience in the Jaladutas in Lilamrita. He had a heart attack and he saw that Krishna came, was rubbing his heart, massaging him to get his heart to start again and work properly. Then he saw that Krishna had expanded, was right in front of him with all the avatars pulling the boat across the ocean for his preaching mission. Krishna's right by his side. This is a pure devotee. Pure devotee's guru is by the side. One side is guru, right-hand side of the guru is his guru, and right-hand side of his guru is Krishna. They're right next to him. He's never separated. Krishna's body is conquered by the pure devotee because he always remains by the side of his pure devotee. Krishna's words are conquered because he always chants the glories of his devotees. It says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and you see so many examples in Chaitanya Bhagavat especially, it says Lord Chaitanya, this is in Chaitanya Bhagavat, he would glorify his followers and glorify his devotees. It seemed that he had five mouths, panchamukh. He was so much attached to glorifying his devotees. And Shiva Sangam in the Shatpaharya Leela, the 21 hours of ecstasy, one night, or well, several, long time, almost two nights or whatever, a couple of nights or whatever, he would collect all his intimate antaranga bhaktas in Shiva Sangam, and he would call them up, Haridas, remember that night, Shrivas, remember that night you were running from the Muslims, you're going to kill your family and rape your wife and burn down your house, and you got to the Ganga, and there were no boats there, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and there was fog everywhere, it was freezing cold winter night in the Mayapur. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, a boatman appeared and said, come, quick, come in my boat. And we went in the boat and disappeared into the fog. And the soldiers came thundering across the fields of Mayapur with their horses. Where did they go? They went this way somewhere. Where are they? I can't see anything. There's so much fog. Where did they go? I don't know. They disappeared. Maybe they drowned. I don't know. There's no boats. How could they get across? The Ganga is so vast. It's miles and miles across. Oh, yes, we'll go tell the Qazi that we finished off Shrivas and his family. They drowned. But that was me, Shrivas. I came as a boatman to ferry you across the Ganga to safety. And this way, and then he glorified Haridas. So it says, Vrindavanas Thakur said that he's glorifying Lord Chaitanya. He said, Panchmukharitam. With five mouths he was glorifying. He would glorify his devotees with five mouths. And we have one mouth and we can never think anything good to say about the devotees. If we ever open our mukha and say anything about devotees, it's, this guy did this and this guy did that. And this sannyasi and this guru and this grihastha. And we say with our one mouth, which is not much, we usually say not good things about anybody except ourselves. We always say something, do you know how great I am? And I did this and I did that. Oh yes, you're so great. But when it comes to devotees, that's the last thing on our mind, is to glorify devotees genuinely and heartfully. This is a problem. But just think, we got already with our one mouth, ek mukh, we get ourselves in so much trouble. Speaking offensively about devotees, imagine if we had four mouths like Brahma or Panchamukh Mahadev. Or Hanuman, five mouths. With five mouths, boy, would really say a lot of bad things about a lot of devotees and really go to hell forever. So we're lucky we only have one mouth. But Krishna loves to glorify his devotees. It said that it seemed that Lord Chaitanya had five mouths when he was glorifying the devotees. He was so much relishing, he was saying so much nice things. So Krishna's words are conquered. His van, Krishna van, is also jita. It's jita conquered. And Krishna's tanu is jita. Krishna tanu jita. He's also conquered by the bodies of the pure devotees. And his words are conquered by the words of the pure devotees. Devotees are spending day and night glorifying Krishna. Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayora. Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunarana Varnane. In the ninth canto, it describes Ambrish. Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayora. His mind was always fixed on the lotus feet of Vaikunthanath, Narayan. Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayora. Vaikuntha Nath Guna Anavakya. He said he was always glorifying the qualities of the Lord of Vaikuntha with his mouth. Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vachamsi, Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunarana Guna Varna. Varna means different classes of Guna. Guna Varna, Varnane. Varna means sound or syllable. He was making, vibrating different sounds and syllables and words and sentences and paragraphs and pages to glorify the Vachamsi. Vachamsi means van, vacha, vak. Words, with beautiful words. Uchama Shloka, he was glorifying the Lord of Vaikuntha, his Ishtadev. So this is devotee, the pure devotee, Ambarish. So he's all, the pure devotee is always glorifying the Lord, and the Lord, every opportunity he gets, he glorifies the devotees. How does he do that? Do you ever see? Have you ever seen Krishna come down and stand in front of him and say, oh, you're a great Sankirtan devotee, you're serving so many books, you're this, that. And so many people become devotees by your book distribution, by your classes, and they're so impressed and making advancement, and you're so much contributed. Have you ever seen Krishna come in front of him with a trumpet? Listen to all the bhaktas. How does Krishna use his mouth to glorify devotees? How does devotee? What's the proof that Krishna has conquered? What's the proof that the pure devotees have conquered Krishna? And that, and in result of being conquered by the words of the pure devotees, that Krishna is always chanting the glories of his devotees. How so? Krishna is in the heart of everyone. So someone may go somewhere and they meet someone, or there's some people together, and then someone comes and says, "Who's your guru?" And then someone, he starts saying, "Oh, you're a disciple of him. He's this and that," and he starts. So this person, you're not there, but this person is glorifying you so much to this other person. I mean, if he's a genuine devotee, not a fault finder, envious person. Now that seemingly devotee in disguise who's speaking about you to some other god brother in some distant place, or someone might say, "I'm a disciple of so and so." Then that person will say, "Oh, I know your guru." And then now, somewhere outside of the country, your glories are being pronounced by some devotee. Oh, he's like this and that and this and that. That's Krishna. That's Krishna speaking through the mouth of the other devotee to glorify his pure devotee. That's how Krishna does it. Or he may come himself, but generally he speaks through the mouth of his devotees. And then the third point of this verse is Krishna's mind, manobi, Manobir, is conquered because he always thinks about his loving devotees. We're always thinking, Savai Mana Krishna Krishna Pad. We're always thinking about Krishna. Well, Krishna is always thinking about us also, about our welfare, how to improve us and how to help us advance in Krishna consciousness. So we'll continue there tomorrow. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.